This is Mentor, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I'm Bobby Temps. Each Thursday, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. With special guests and stats you can trust, here we go. Okay, so this week we're talking about all things schizophrenia. And to start off, I've got two definitions I found really helpful for describing schizophrenia. I'll just pull a little segment from each of them. The first one is from the NHS, a long-term mental health condition which causes a range of different psychological symptoms. Doctors often describe schizophrenia as a type of psychosis. This means a person may not always be able to distinguish their own thoughts and ideas from reality. And in addition from that, from the National Institute of Mental Health, from their definition, schizophrenia is a chronic and severe mental health disorder that affects how a person thinks, feels, and behaves. Although schizophrenia is not as common as other mental disorders, the symptoms can be very debilitating. I just wanted to pull in both of those definitions as I feel like compared to some of the better known conditions, some of the perhaps more common conditions that we've discussed on the show, schizophrenia is often misunderstood. It can often be one that people are particularly fearful of. And that's something I'm quite keen to kind of go into detail with and try and address with today's guest. But hopefully those definitions give you an idea of, in a very simple sense, what this kind of condition is about. Anything you want to add to that, Annie?
Yeah, well, I think there's definitions are super comprehensive and really concise, and I just wanted to add that schizophrenia is something that I perhaps ashamedly know so little about, which is why I'm really glad that we're doing this episode, because not only is I hope it's gonna help our listeners out, but also it's gonna help me out exponentially. Like, I'm always keen to learn and grow and improve myself and educate myself around anything to do with mental health. So
right. Well, I'm glad we're catering to you. Obviously, you're my ideal audience.
Oh, just for me. Yeah.
It's basically the Annie show, what we've got running.
La, 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 Annie show.
So, in addition to that, we've got a few statistics to go through.
Boom.
So, these are some statistics from schizophrenia.org.
Go for it.
The first one is, at any one time, around 220,000 people are being treated for schizophrenia in the UK by the NHS. So that in itself is so many, and I'm sad to say far more than I thought it was. I didn't realise it was as common as it clearly is.
For sure.
But also,
just to follow on from a previous theme, what town is that the population of?
I don't even know.
Yeah, ask Siri.
No, but Siri can't tell us what town that's the population.
Oh, hey, hang on a second. Guess which city has 229,700 people as per the 2011 census? Look over here.
What, Brighton again?
Brighton and Hove. 229,700.
Is that the theme now? Is it just any excuse
to
mention Brighton?
The population of Brighton.
It's all a conspiracy. Cool. All right.
No comment from here on out.
Grand.
I'll show myself out. Door closes.
So, in summary, to bring it back, it's a lot of people. And also, that specific stat mentions people that are being treated for schizophrenia in the UK by the NHS. So, our guest today is joining us by the wonders of Skype from the US. And the numbers are much bigger over there. And also, there's probably many people here that are undiagnosed or just aren't being treated by the NHS, are being treated privately, or I hope not, but there's always a proportion that aren't getting treatment.
Yeah, and I didn't even consider the proportion of people that are being treated privately.
Yeah, I'm very pro-NHS. So anyway, moving on to more important stats than whether or not my counselling is private. Another one that's particularly shocking with schizophrenia, again from schizophrenia.org, is actually how much it can affect the death rate of those dealing with it, in that sufferers have a 5 to 10% chance of dying by their own hand, it's described as, so it's referencing suicide there, which is around 2.5 times higher than that of the general population, according to the stats.
Wow.
So that's something where not only is it such a debilitating condition, and it's one that can be incredibly scary for those dealing with it, because it can affect your relationship with reality and create all kinds of disturbing symptoms, but also it can affect people's feelings about whether they can continue, whether they feel able to keep living.
Oh, that's so sad.
And I think that's a good way of illustrating how much a condition like this can take over people's lives. I don't really have anything more to add to that one. It's just
no, I don't. Yeah, I wish I had something super intelligent to say, but I think it kind of speaks for itself, really. Like, that's super sad. What a humbling or sobering, I think is the best. Yeah, sobering. A sobering statistic.
The next stat I've got is another sad one, and that is that only 13% of people living with schizophrenia in the UK are in any kind of work.
What?
And again, that's incredibly low. It also represents how much this condition is long-term for most people. About 25% of people who suffer an episode of schizophrenia will go on to recover completely. So that means the 75%, whilst it's great that those 25% are recovering, that's 75% that, whilst it may not be a lifelong condition for them, they are having one or more relapse where they have further episodes.
God.
However, to finish up on that in a more positive note, due to modern medication, particularly antipsychotics, really helping to reduce the amount to which this affects people's lives day to day.
I imagine that the intervention of medication for people who suffer from schizophrenia is so much more crucial than it is from someone who may be suffering from depression or anxiety. I feel like, and I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I'd be more than willing to hear if I am wrong, but I feel like if you're suffering from mild to moderate anxiety and you actually feel that medication isn't for you, then that's not the end of the world, where I feel like this is something that actually requires some sort of chemical intervention.
So whilst I'm still not a doctor and can't really be an ultimate authority on this, from what I do understand about this condition and the research I've done, if I quote it directly, it says episodes of schizophrenia are often triggered by environmental factors such as stress and by hormonal changes such as those associated with puberty, childbirth and menopause. So these are some of the key things that can trigger schizophrenic episodes, or they can be referred to as breakdowns. In the episode, I guess, refers to breaks as a shorthand. Like any mental illness, there's factors like self-care always come into it. You know, I talked to the guest off air and he was telling me that one of the key ones for him has always been stress. In combination with medication, he really tries to work on reducing his stress levels as much as possible to prevent triggering symptoms or needing to up his dose due to those symptoms. So whilst there aren't many people that are dealing with schizophrenia long term that a doctor wouldn't diagnose some kind of medication for, there's still definitely other factors.
So I just can't wait to really delve into this episode and really delve into the interview. I'm so excited to hear it.
Great. So we'll get into the guest in a moment then. It's William Chang. He's a writer who has written a staggering number of books he'll tell you about in the episode. And he shares a really personal insight into this condition, particularly when we talk about his early years and when he first experienced symptoms. So hopefully we all learn a few things about schizophrenia in this episode. But first,
this week's Audible recommendation.
I'm recommending A Schizophrenic Will, a story of madness, a story of hope. It's by this week's guest, William Chang, and it's all about his personal experience right from his very first schizophrenic symptoms on to when he was receiving the diagnosis, the proper medication, and beyond. I found it really inspiring, and it was such an insight into the kind of symptoms and delusions that he was going through that I think are so misunderstood by people that haven't experienced a condition. So if you want to learn anything more about schizophrenia after this episode, I'd really recommend this book. And as always, you can find the link and details for this down in the description. The link to get your first Audible book for free with us is bit.ly/mentalbooks.
So my name is William Jang, Master of Library Sciences. I'm the author to date of about 72 books in English, Spanish, French, and Portuguese. I just want to start off with a little bit of my story. I started my life 3 months premature, and throughout my life, I had a lot of issues because of my own genetics, it turns out. I have something called the MHTFR genetic mutation, and it's given me a lot of issues throughout my life, from schizophrenia, irritable bowel syndrome, multiple chemical sensitivity, the depression, stuff like that. And today, that was where I began. So yeah, that's where I am today. Pleased to be here. Yeah.
So if we go back to roughly where that book started, where you were first getting symptoms of schizophrenia, could you talk us through that experience?
Oh my God. It's the most terrifying experience when you come through your first psychotic break. It's like, what's real? What's not real? Am I dead? Should I be dead? Did my life just end? What's going on? You know, it's horrible. My first break, I thought all my friends became gangsters. And then, you know, I checked myself into a hospital because I thought it'd be the only safe place for me. Luckily, I was blessed to be in a hospital setting. And then I thought I was in hell. I thought the hospital was hell, literally. In this world, obviously, it was a hospital. I was a safe place. People were taking care of me. I was lucky to be there, honestly. If I were elsewhere, you know, it would have been very bad. The first chapter of my book, A Schizophrenic Will, ends with, I said an atheist prayer, whatever the hell that is. Because, yeah, that's where I was. I was searching. I felt I was in hell. And those were my symptoms. And that's the first chapter.
And I found I listened to it as an audiobook myself, and I found, like, even right from the start, you could sense the trauma and the distress you were going through because of all these things going through your mind, thinking your friends are gangsters, thinking you're going through hell, thinking, you know, the doctors are there to hurt you and things like this. Does it come in waves where, like, all of that seems real and then you get moments of clarity?
Okay, so for me, like, mental illness is a lie. So all mental illnesses, right? Like, whether it's schizophrenia, depression, bipolar, anything. So, for example, like, depression's a lie because it's a liar and a thief. It lies to you when the sun is out and it tells you that it's dark. It takes away your happiness. Schizophrenia, the same thing. Paranoia, it's a liar. Not everybody's out to get you. There's good people out there, there's bad. It's a thief. It takes away your life. It's a liar and a thief. But so as to your question, like, when did I get insight? And that's really the word that I like to use into my own condition. Is it was the medicine that helped me get the insight into my condition. It was called Navain. It came out in 1968. It's a drug that was manufactured and designed by Pfizer. It's been the best medicine for me for my schizophrenia, hands down. You know, I like blocking the dopamine and it really helps. So without the antipsychotic, I never would have come back to this world, you know, as a sane person. I never would have. And the thing is, my break, as opposed to a normal quote unquote person's break, happened in less than a day. Most people break over a year. I broke in a day. And my break was extremely powerful and strong, and I'm lucky I survived, honestly.
Yeah. And so when going through that and when you were in hospital, at what stage were you assessed and first medicated, and how did that initial experience of medication go?
I was first, so I don't know if you remember, I think it was 8 guys that jumped me or 10. So that was the first time I had a physical contact with the mental health system. It was very tough love that they showed me. You know, they saved my life, but it's very tough love. They hit me in the head so hard, but I thank God they took care of me. I was not an easy person to take care of. You know, so that was my first contact. Pretty soon after, they gave me like other drugs, like Ativan.
And for the listener context, at that point, you were already within the hospital in a secure unit. Is that right?
That is right. You're right. This is like maybe hours after I checked myself in that I felt something was going very wrong.
And do you remember much now of how that initial assessment went in hospital?
Actually, I don't believe I talked to a psychiatrist at all, maybe, until I got on the unit 1010 North, 10 North, I believe it was, at Stony Brook University Hospital, where I had Dr. Francis, and I met the esteemed Dr. Fink there, who I've been in contact with recently. He actually read my book, complimented me on it, very kind gentleman. I'm happy he's still alive. He was a little bit older when I met him. He's an expert in ECT. I just had a very good team taking care of me.
And so what was the initial support you were given at that point?
From medical side, family side?
Yeah. Well, I guess both.
So I'll start with the medical side. So they started, honestly, Bobby, for about 2 days, I don't recall much. It was like I was in a dark hole somewhere. And then I remember about 2 days later, apparently, because some light started getting through. And that's when I realized I felt I was in hell. So, you know, but I was getting help with the medication. You know, they were taking me back from that pit of insanity. My family was always very supportive, actually. They were a blessing. You know, to this day, my family is a blessing. You know, no family is perfect, obviously. But they try their best to be supportive and love me to this day. I thank God for them, you know. And so my social side, I had a girlfriend at the time. And it didn't work out eventually for many reasons. But she visited me, brought me food. She's very sweet. I had other friends also who visited me who were very kind in my hour of need. But at the same time, you know, I felt taken care of. I was just very blessed to be taken care of and survive the experience the way I did. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And when you first saw friends and family, were you able to express to them what you'd gone through?
I feared for their lives, honestly, because of the paranoia. The first time I could talk to them, I didn't tell them anything about what was going through my mind. I wanted to protect them against what I thought was a real danger to them and me.
And what was that danger in your mind?
The danger in my mind was actually the doctors and the medical staff. I thought they were, you know, devil worshippers, honestly.
Yeah, and that there was some kind of conspiracy, is that right?
Yes, 100% correct, yeah. And I'm like, you know what? I would rather die and protect my family than have them get hurt. Let me stay here. I'm not telling them a thing. Yeah, basically.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah. And it's something from my understanding of schizophrenia, believing that there are these kind of conspiracies going on against you from organizations is quite a common symptom or feature. Would you agree?
It is. Yeah, it's 100% common, yeah. I mean, look at like a lot of people who have paranoia. They have, you know, they think everybody's out to get them, you know, and like that's just not the case. You know, they take something that has probably a grain of reality, but then they supersize it, blow it completely out of proportion until they lose reality.
It's interesting. Schizophrenia is something that I feel like is so outside of the experience of most people that it'd be one of the mental illnesses that is hardest to understand.
Sure.
I feel very lucky from my perspective that I've had experiences like I used to work for Samaritans, which is a suicide helpline here in the UK.
Okay.
It doesn't just deal with suicide, but that is its main purpose of suicide prevention.
Mm-hmm.
And so through that, I did speak to a few people going through schizophrenic episodes. One in particular that I remember, it was like having a three-way conversation. The woman I was speaking to was also speaking to what she called jinns, so these other beings that, you know, we couldn't see.
Mm-hmm.
And to a certain extent, she knew didn't exist. But at the time, they were very real for her, and she could see them and she could hear them. Mm-hmm. And speaking to me was the only distraction she could think of. And it's something that luckily I had great training for in terms of knowing how to deal with that. Because actually the worst thing I could have done, even though it might be the instinct thing, would be to say, that's not real, you're fine, those things don't exist, it's just me and you talking.
Sure.
But actually, in that moment, that's her 100% reality.
True.
She
can't
see beyond it.
True, but beyond, no, even if you did say it, the thing is, psychosis becomes more real than reality, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing with depression. Like, if somebody's depressed, yeah, it's not that bad, you know? You can't see it, you know? You can't see it. It's about vision, and it's about what you see.
Absolutely. Yeah. I feel like it's partly that the symptoms of schizophrenia can be so extreme and so outside people's field of awareness and experience.
Sure.
And I feel like it's partly that certain things like depression, so I have depression, and I feel like growing up, it was talked about more than other conditions. And I think to a certain extent, it's a lot more understood, a lot more accepted.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think there is still this stigma around any kind of psychotic disorders that people fear that, you know, these people are dangerous and they, you know, won't understand it. And it's scary. And I can understand that. What were you
going to
say?
Well, I mean, aren't all mental illnesses scary, though? I mean, honestly, all physical illnesses, mental illnesses, aren't they all scary, actually?
No, absolutely, I agree. I'm just trying to get my head around potentially why some people have, you know, different levels of fear for different mental illnesses.
Okay.
So for me personally, I can understand schizophrenia.
Yeah.
To me, it's really scary.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
Because it's this idea of something coming into your reality where you can't separate what's real or not if you're having an episode. And some of these things can be really long term. Whereas with depression, in my experience, it's emotions that I already have and experiences that I already have that become darker and more negative and sadder because of the condition, rather than it being something completely new and outside of my awareness that I still can't escape from them.
It's sort of like, you know, some people see the world with rose-colored glasses. It's like very hard for these people to get depressed, right? Like, oh, you know, this happened. Oh, you know, it's all, you know what I'm saying? But depression is more like shades. Like, you see everything darker and, you know. Because I used to have clinical depression as well. Very seriously so. May I talk about that for a second? Or
maybe come back to that later on in the episode.
Right, sure.
So we'll go back to what you were talking about then. So you had really supportive family experience when you were going through the initial symptoms. You were getting the medical support really quickly, which is great to hear. And so getting back into your normal life to a certain extent.
Okay. So the thing is, as you read in the book, I tried to go back to work, everything I did. I finished college, thank God, somehow. Very hard to do when you have a psychosis. But I finished and it happened. And I had to go back to classes on an extremely large dose of antipsychotic. But I finished everything. I have a drive to me.
Definitely.
I'm a God-given drive. So the thing is, then after college, and it was obvious I couldn't go back to work, you know, so I got on disability. I waited 9 months for disability. And then I got a small check. Went back to work eventually for my stepsister, selling t-shirts. And because of the support I was getting from a program called IPRT, I went back to school eventually as a librarian. You know, I was called to become a librarian. And because of the financial support I got from my sister from the job and the support from the IPRT program, I went back to become to library school. And that was a new chapter of my life.
Great.
Yeah.
And so at that point, how were you coping? Were there still symptoms? Was the medication alleviating them? Where were you at?
So, yeah, I still had symptoms. I don't know if I'm ever going to be, quote unquote, well in my life, you know, like normal, you know what I'm saying? Completely. I mean, I was well enough to basically get into graduate school and 3 years later finish it with a master's in library sciences with honors. So that was great. I was good enough.
Good.
Yeah.
And so, in terms of your day to day, then, were the symptoms that were still affecting you? Talk us through what those were.
My main diagnosis in the DSM-5, they've deprecated paranoid schizophrenia to just schizophrenia. I don't know if that's the best thing because for me, I believe there's about 8 different kinds of schizophrenia and different causes, mostly. So anyway, so at that time, I was under the DSM-4 diagnosis paranoid schizophrenia. I had, my major symptom was paranoia. When I got tired at night, especially, or the medication was low, racing thoughts also happened, you know, quite often. But the Novain really worked well for me. It stopped these things within about 30 minutes. You have to take an antipsychotic every day of your life if you're going to take antipsychotics. Traditional medical model says you must take antipsychotics, and they're very useful to control symptoms for sure.
Mm-hmm. And then did you ever have periods where you needed those up depending on what you were going through?
I had the up. If I was under a lot of stress, I had to up the medicine dose, of course. Yeah. And I was very cognizant when I was getting symptomatic, so I could nip it in the bud, you know. So I'm like, my thought patterns are going off. Let me take some more medicine. Boom, done. Good and good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's something that, that I can relate to a lot myself, where sometimes I have to check in with myself and almost like tick boxes off in my mind of, I'm feeling this way.
Mm-hmm.
Have I eaten recently?
Yes.
Did I sleep okay? Yeah. And then often it's one of those two things. And then if it's not, then it's often depression. Mm-hmm. There's something more that's going on.
True, my friend.
So yeah, so I absolutely understand that. Mm-hmm. And so when was it you had your depression diagnosis?
So about 8 years ago, I was diagnosed with major depression because I was sleeping up to 21 hours a day. And I was in a very bad place. I checked myself in, and it was hard to leave the hospital because I was very unstable. But I survived, you know. It was a hard thing with insurance. They wouldn't keep me, but I needed more help. But what are you going to do? If your insurance doesn't pay for you, a lot of times you're up a creek without a paddle. But I survived, is the point. And then I had the major depression on strong antidepressants for about 3 years. So I became strongly suicidal, actually, Bobby. I am very sorry to say about that. Suicidal ideation, when it's powerful, is another kind of hell than schizophrenia. It's very hard, yeah. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I had strong suicidal ideation. Even though I was starting a master's program at Zicklin School of Business, MBA, and I was excited to start on one level, but the other side of me was something wanted me dead inside of me. So luckily, I was writing the first edition of The Medical Librarian's Guide to Natural Mental Health, and I found a technique by writing that. I was writing the book to help other people, but it saved my life. My book saved my life. And I don't have clinical depression. I haven't had it for 5 years now. I'm not depressed, not at all. You know, it's pretty great, you know. I love it.
That's brilliant to hear.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that you mentioned that writing that book saved your life, because I think that's actually quite a common experience that we can set out to try and help other people. But in doing so, as a byproduct, we end up learning more that will help ourselves. I know certainly through doing this podcast, I've got to understand mental health so much better.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize that I had internalized some of the stigma and that I was holding back from talking about it until I started the podcast, because of course now everyone wants to talk to me about mental health.
Good.
And so I have that platform.
You are totally right. You help others. It actually comes back to you so much, even more.
And and it's interesting. And I think that's a good example of, there's still unfortunate stigma. We had a whole episode recently about stigma and the different types of it. And one of the ones briefly touched on was this idea that people talking about mental illness is a form of attention seeking. Unfortunately, not there are still people that think that. But obviously, you can imagine the people I speak to on the show and the people I work with to make it happen. Right. They're mostly there to help other people. They're either just trying to get on with their own life, deal with it themselves, or they're trying to do even more because they know how tough it is. And sometimes it takes prioritizing others to prioritize yourself in a weird backwards way.
It's like a cycle. You have to prioritize everybody. Everybody deserves love, right? Is what it is at the end of the day. You know, you can't neglect yourself. You can't neglect others.
That's sometimes a lesson you learn by trying to teach it to others in a weird sort of way.
True.
Fast forwarding now, how is your mental health? Are there any particular things you've found super helpful in terms of like even if it's just daily routine or just general tricks that you found really helpful to keep a healthy mind?
I am, Bobby, I'm pleased as punch to share this news with you on your podcast. Let me tell you something. 26 years ago to this day, I was diagnosed with schizophrenia, Labor Day 1992. I can tell you for a fact, I'm completely on the road to recovery, my friend.
Brilliant.
I took no medication basically for 6 days. And that hasn't happened in 26 years, my friend, Bobby.
Wow.
You know, so, and I'm well, I mean, I am a born again Christian now, which is great.
Brilliant to hear. Are there any things kind of day to day that you're finding really helpful?
Yeah, let me tell you my daily routine. I'm blessed to have my mom still in my life. My stepfather passed, I'm sorry to say. But my mom and I, we go to the gym pretty much every morning we can. I take her to the gym. I take care of my mom. Then after that, I go about my day. You know, whether I've been with my lady, you know, my sweet lady or friends or, you know, maybe my book club or writing or reading something or maybe going to church or, you know, whatever, you know, like I don't like movies so much generally, but you know, I have a normal life and it's a beautiful life.
That's really great to hear how far you've come. So
thank you.
We're coming near our time. So could you talk the listeners through a little bit about, if you can, one particular book of yours that you'd really like to recommend? Obviously, you have so many people can go through.
Sure. My second book after my master's thesis was titled A Schizophrenic Will, A Story of Madness and a Story of Hope. I wanted it to be an inspiring story. It was half a struggle against the mental illness and half of it a story of inspiration. I'm proud of the book. It takes discipline to do these things, but with a will, there's a way, right?
For sure.
Yeah.
Was that an intentional pun with your own name?
I'm not really sure. It might have been. Sorry.
Our petition to get mental health education onto the curriculum for all schools is continuing to gather momentum. And the Department for Education has now put forward initial plans on how to make this happen. If this petition is something you'd like to learn more about and hopefully sign it and share it as well, you can find out more at bit.ly/mentalpetition. The link for that is also in the description. Thank you for listening. For a list of our recommended resources, visit mentalpodcast.co.uk. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling or other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by NetSky. Links in the description. Speak to you next Thursday, and remember, you are enough.